Chapter 1. 6 months later, Kate sat in her high-backed chair atop the dais, waiting to start the day's session. The courtroom was packed, and she hid her anticipation behind a professional mask, which was turning out to be a job requirement. The jury trial had taken all last week, but today was the only day that counted, like the final 2 minutes in a basketball game. Sixers, Hornets. It was on the bar last night. Wonder who won. Kate shifted behind the slippery wall of stacked pleadings in front of her. She hadn't slept well last night and was relying on her concealer, but was otherwise in full costume. Synthetic black robes, dark blonde hair in a judicial chignon, a swipe of pink gloss on her lips, and neutral makeup on largish blue eyes. Finally, the courtroom deputy flashed Kate a wink. Showtime. Kate gestured to plaintiff's counsel. Mr. Temin, let's begin. I assume that plaintiff continues his testimony this morning?
Yes, Your Honor.
Nathan Temin was a roly-poly lawyer with the paunch of a much older man and a dark suit that begged to be ironed, worn with equally unruly black hair. Still, Kate knew better than to judge a trial lawyer by his cover. She had dressed down for court many times. Prada didn't win jury verdicts. Excellent, Kate nodded. Fire when ready.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Temin hustled to the podium with a big pen and a legal pad, then pressed down his suit with a pudgy hand. He greeted the jury and turned to his client, already rising from counsel table.
Mr. Mars, please take the stand.
Richard Mars walked to the witness stand and necks craned from the gallery. Reporters scribbled away, and sketch artists switched to their flesh-toned chalk. The Eastern District of Pennsylvania didn't allow cameras in the courtroom, for which Kate, thank God, and Chief Judge Sherman.
Good morning, Your Honor, Mars said in his soft-spoken way, sitting down after he was sworn in. He was barely 30 years old, and his baby blue eyes showed litigation strain. He smiled tightly, his lips taut as a rubber band, and he ran a finger rake through muddy brown curls that sprouted from under a crocheted yarmulke. A dark suit jacket popped open over his white shirt, and his striped tie hung unevenly. Everybody knew that people looked like their dogs, but Kate thought they looked like their lawyers.
Good morning, Mr. Mars. She smiled at Mars in a professional way, feeling subterranean sympathy for his position. He was claiming that a powerful TV producer had stolen his idea for a series about Philadelphia lawyers and developed it into the cable blockbuster, Attorneys at Law. In this battle between David and Goliath, Mars held the slingshot. At the lectern, Temin tugged the black bud of a microphone down to his height.
Now, Mr. Mars, you testified last week that you had two meetings with Mr. Simone leading up to the critical meeting. Please remind the jury of what took place at the first meeting on June 10th.
Objection, Your Honor, said George Hartford, defense counsel.
Hartford had gray eyes behind slightly tinted bifocals and was prematurely bald. He had to be about 50 and stood tall and fit in a slim Italian suit with a yellow silk tie.
Asked and answered. Plaintiff's counsel is wasting the jury's time.
Temin said, Your Honor, it's appropriate to review this proof because the weekend intervened.
Overruled.
Kate shot both lawyers her sternest look.
Let's not let the objections get out of hand today, boys. Play nice.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Temin nodded, but a cranky Hartford eased back in his chair next to his client, producer Art Simone. Even seated, Simone looked tall and trim in his prime at a prosperous 40-something. His reddish hair had been shorn fashionably close to his scalp, and his tortoiseshell glasses paired with a caramel-colored silk tie and tan houndstooth suit. If Mars and Temin were the mutts in this dogfight, Simone and Hartford were purebred Afghans.
Mr. Mars, Temin began again, tell us briefly what happened at the June meeting with Mr. Simone.
Well, my background is from the DA's office, handling cases concerning computer fraud and internet crime. I always liked computers.
Mars sounded almost apologetic.
But I wanted to be a writer, so I started writing a screenplay for a TV show about four lawyers and how they use computer skills to solve murders. I called it Hard Drive. It was my wife who said, Why don't you do something about it?
Morris smiled at his wife in the front row of the gallery, a sweet-faced brunette wearing a long skirt and sensible shoes.
So I called Art, Mr. Simone, and told him what I was doing and asked if he would meet with me about it, and he agreed to fly out to Philly to take the meeting.
Morris turned to the jury in an earnest way.
That's what they call it in L.A., taking a meeting. When they say no, they call it taking a hard pass. A soft pass is a maybe. I thought a soft pass was about sex, but what do I know?
The jurors chuckled with evident warmth. Nobody loves underdogs like Philly.
Temin asked, "Had you known Mr. Simone Pryor?"
"Yes, I knew him from summer camp, from when I was, like, 10 years old. Camp Willowbark, Unit A. He was my senior counselor, and I looked up to him like a big brother. I heard he was doing TV in Hollywood, so I hoped he'd help me out."
"And what happened at the meeting, briefly?"
"We met at Le Bec Fin, and I told him all the details about my idea and asked him, would he consider it for his production company? The lead lawyer in my series is a former detective, an Italian guy from South Philly who dresses great and is like a tie freak."
"You needn't repeat the details,"
Temin interjected, preempting Hartford's objection.
"Okay, right, sorry. All that's important is that the four lawyers I told Mr. Simone about ended up being exactly like the four lawyers on Attorneys at Law."
"Objection, opinion," Hartford said, and Kate waved him off.
"Overruled. The jury knows it's his opinion."
Temin paused.
"By the way, Mr. Morris, were you surprised that Mr. Simone flew here to see you as opposed to you flying out to California to see him?"
"I was, but he said he wanted to visit his mom anyway. She lives in a nursing home in Jersey."
Mars's expression darkened.
"Now I think he said to meet in Philly because Pennsylvania law is tougher than California law on..."
"Objection!" Hartford shouted, next to a stiffening client, and Kate raised a hand.
"Granted. That's enough opinion, Mr. Mars. Don't make me sorry."
The jury smiled, and Temin asked,
"Did Mr. Simone take notes during this meeting?"
"No."
"Now, Mr. Mars, let's jump to the second meeting on September 15th and 16th, also in Philadelphia. Who was present?"
"Myself, Detective Russo, and Mr. Simone and his assistant, Micah Gilbert."
"Is that Ms. Gilbert seated in the gallery behind Mr. Simone?"
"Yes."
Mars gestured to a pretty young woman in the front row. Micah Gilbert had attended the trial since day one, sitting next to an attractive jury consultant whose chin-length hair was an optimistic shade of red.
"What happened at that meeting?"
"Mr. Simone came to Philly to meet with me and a friend from the homicide division, Detective Frank Russo. Russo was the role model for the main character in my show, the South Philly guy. On the first day, we met at Liberty's in Northern Liberty's. I picked the place because real detectives hang there."
The juror's eyes had lit up with recognition. The restaurant in Attorneys at Law was also called Liberty's, and most of them had seen the show. It was impossible to find anyone in America who hadn't, despite Hartford's best efforts. The defense lawyer had used his three peremptory strikes to eliminate as many viewers as possible, with the help of his red-headed jury consultant. Kate never used a consultant. Picking a jury was trial lawyer 101.
"Now, what took place at Liberty's?"
"Detective Russo and I told Mr. Simone about our characters and storylines. Also, I gave him some info on computers."
Mars's gaze slid sideways to Simone.
"Because he doesn't know anything about them." "Did Mr. Simone or Ms. Gilbert take notes while you were talking?"
"No."
"Did you think that was strange?"
"I didn't then, but now I think he didn't want a record of..."
"Objection! That's speculation again, Your Honor. Move that the irrelevant evidence be stricken." Hartford rose, but Kate waved him into his seat.
"Granted."
Kate turned to Mars on the stand.
"Please refrain from editorializing."
Temin continued.
"And what happened after lunch at Liberty's?"
"Detective Russo and I took Mr. Simone and Ms. Gilbert to the roundhouse, the police administration building, and we told him how things really work in homicide. We showed him some details about the squad room, like how the detectives prop the door open with an old trash can, and they never notice that the trash can stinks. Only visitors do." Mars turned again to the jury. The trash can matters because it tells you about the characters, how they get so used to bad stuff, like the ugliness they see every day on the job.
Several of the jurors nodded soberly, and one cast a cold eye at defense table. If the jury got the case now, they'd vote for Mars and his symbolic trash can.
And what did you do the second day?
Detective Russo and I drove Mr. Simone and Ms. Gilbert around the neighborhoods where the stories took place. It's called scouting locations.
Timmon turned a page on his legal pad.
Finally, we come to your critical meeting with Mr. Simone on November 9th, also at Le Bec Fin. Who was present at the meeting?
Me and Mr. Simone.
And what took place at this lunch meeting?
Mr. Simone said we were celebrating. He ordered champagne, 2 bottles, even though I'm not a big drinker.
Mars shot a resentful glance at defense table.
Anyway, I told him I had the treatment ready ahead of schedule, and I gave it to him.
Please explain to the jury what a treatment is.
A treatment is a detailed outline of who the characters are and what the storylines would be. I had told Mr. Simone I'd get the treatment done by August, but I couldn't do it and my job at the DA's office, so I quit my job.
Your Honor, may I approach?
Timmon asked, and Kate nodded. He took from counsel table 3 thick black binders, labeled hard drive, and gave 1 to Hartford, 1 to the court clerk, and walked to the witness stand, handing the 3rd to Mars.
Mr. Mars, is this the treatment that you wrote and gave to Mr. Simone?
Yes, Mars answered, examining the notebook, which was admitted into evidence.
Timmon turned again to his witness.
Did Mr. Simone take notes at the luncheon?
No.
Timmon let the implication sink in.
And then what happened?
Then Mr. Simone said,
"Objection, hearsay!"
Hartford called out, his shiny Mont Blanc poised in midair, and Timmon stiffened.
"It's not hearsay, Your Honor.
Overruled." Kate turned to Mars. "Please, go ahead."
"He said he was going to get the show ready to be produced, and when he got it together, he'd call me. He was very excited, and we made a deal."
"Objection to the characterization, Your Honor,"
Hartford called out louder, rising. "There was no deal in this matter."
"Yes, there was."
Timmon matched him decibel for decibel, and Kate raised her hand like a stop sign.
"Gentlemen, enough. The objection is overruled. Mr. Hartford, the plaintiff can give his side of the story in his testimony, and your client can give his side. It has a nice symmetry, yes?"
Kate gestured at Timmon. "Proceed."
"Mr. Mars, what was the deal between you and Mr. Simone?"
"The deal was that he would produce my idea as a TV series. And he said, if I make money, you'll make money."
"He said those words?"
Timmon asked. And back at defense table, Hartford shook his head in mute frustration. Simone remained stoic.
Mars answered, "Verbatim."
"Is it possible that you misheard him? You testified that you had been drinking champagne. Maybe he said, pass the salt."
"No, I heard him perfectly. Plus, he already had the salt."
The jury laughed, and so did the gallery. Timmon was trying to take the sting out of the cross-examination to come, but Kate didn't think it would do any good. She disguised her concern, resting her chin on her fist.
"Mr. Mart, seriously, how can you be so sure?"
"Because I'd been wondering about when we were going to discuss money. My wife kept wanting me to ask him, but it was never the right time."
Mars reddened, and his wife looked down.
"So when he said that, I knew we had a real deal."
"Did you and Mr. Simone put this deal into writing?"
"We didn't need to. At least I didn't think we needed to."
Mars scowled.
"We're friends."
"We're friends.
He was my senior counselor. I trusted him to take care of me."
Mars pursed his lips, and his disillusionment hung in the air between him and the jurors.
On the bench, Kate was about to burst, but instead wrote on her pad, "Didn't law school cure you of trusting others?"
Timmon said,
"Mr. Mars, some jurors might not understand that you, as a lawyer, would go so far without a written contract. What would you say to that?"
"I'd say they were right, but lawyers are people too."
Mars turned again to the jury.
"I admit I got carried away with the whole Hollywood thing. He has a jet, a limo. He knows all these famous people. I felt cool for the first time in my life. I may have been naive, But that doesn't change the fact that Art Simone stole my show.
No further questions, Temin said, but Hartford was already on his feet. I have cross-examination, Your Honor.
Kate nodded, and Hartford strode to the lectern vacated by Temin. He began in a clipped tone.
Mr. Mars, just a few quick questions about this alleged deal. You admit it was never put in writing.
It was an oral agreement. Oral agreements are made every day. It's called an IFCOM deal, standard in California.
Kate picked up her pen. Please, God, help this boy. Can't you see his yarmulke?
Hartford bore down. Mr. Mars, I repeat, this deal wasn't written, was it? Yes or no?
No, it wasn't.
Now, you and Mr. Simone didn't discuss any specific terms of this deal, did you?
As I testified, he said, if I make money, you'll make money.
Perhaps you misunderstood me.
Hartford squared his padded shoulders. I meant you and Mr. Simone did not discuss a specific price for your idea, did you?
I gave him the treatment for hard drive, too, Mars added.
I'll amend my question. You and Mr. Simone didn't discuss a specific price for your idea and your treatment, did you?
No.
You didn't discuss when, where, or how any payment would be made, did you?
No.
You didn't discuss who would pay you, whether it would be Mr. Simone or his production company, did you?
No.
So you discussed no specifics of this supposed deal at your luncheon meeting, did you?
No.
How about in any of the phone calls or the emails between the two of you, about which you testified last week?
No, as I said, because...
Yes or no?
No,
Mars answered reluctantly. His mouth snapped back into its rubber band, and the jurors eyed him, a sympathetic furrowing of their collective brow. They'd not only hold Simone liable for damages, they'd have him drawn and quartered.
No further questions, Hartford said, finishing his cross more quickly than anyone except Kate had anticipated. Mr. Temin, any redirect? She asked.
Yes, Your Honor.
Temin returned to the lectern and embarked upon a series of questions that rehashed old ground. And Kate sustained two of Hartford's objections for good measure. But the testimony didn't change anything, and by its conclusion, she adjourned court for lunch, grabbing her legal pad as she rose. On it, she had written, "Is the only justice on TV?"